I'm Michelle Grattan and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. This week, the government returned to one of its strongest themes, union misconduct. It introduced new legislation that will aim to put a stop to secret deals being made between companies and unions without the knowledge of union members. To discuss the new measures, we're joined today by the Minister for Employment, Michaela Cash. Michaela Cash, the legislation's already introduced into the Parliament. Have you begun discussions yet with Labor and the crossbench to get it through the Senate?
Well, yes, you are right, Michelle. The legislation to ban secret payments between employers and unions has now been introduced into the House of Representatives. I'm always in discussion with the crossbenchers, in particular in relation to the implementation of the recommendations from the Hayden Royal Commission. And certainly, I'm always willing to sit down with Brendan O'Connor or Richard Di Natale to discuss the legislation.
So do you think that this legislation, in fact, could get more support more easily than some of your earlier industrial legislation?
It's a really good question. When you look at the legislation and what it seeks to do, it seeks to ban, as I said, secret payments between an employer and a union. And what it also seeks to do is, in terms of legitimate payments, because the government acknowledges there will be legitimate payments that are made, all we're seeking to do is ensure that when you're negotiating an enterprise agreement, prior to the employees voting on the agreement, you disclose all of those legitimate payments.
What would they be?
For example, an employer can actually deduct, for example, union fees from an employee's wages with their consent. That is absolutely legitimate. There might be a payment that is being made to a genuine charity. That is legitimate. And the bill specifically notes this. But all, as I said, all we ask in relation to that is that those payments are disclosed to the employees so that when they're voting on the agreement, they are in possession of all the relevant information. So to go directly to your question, do I think that that legislation should pass the Senate? I think anybody who believes in honesty, anybody who believes in transparency, this legislation goes to the heart of exactly that. It seeks to do something that is very simple. It also seeks to do something, though, when you actually just talk to people in the street about this, I'm often surprised at the reaction because people say to me, "Sorry, Michaela, what do you mean this is not already banned?" So there is clearly a gap in the law. And we just seek to close that gap. And I really would hope to do that with the support of the Senate.
Now, this came out of the Hayden Royal Commission on Trade Unions, and that Royal Commission produced many other recommendations. Yep. Are there others that you want to move on fairly soon?
Look, that's right. During the election campaign last year, the government announced that it accepted the majority of the recommendations coming out of the Hayden Royal Commission. There were some recommendations which were directed to states, so we obviously couldn't accept those. But in terms of the recommendations that were directed to the Commonwealth, I think there was around 79 of them, and we said we accepted them in full. We've already implemented a number of those recommendations. So, for example, Hayden made a number of recommendations in relation to strengthening whistleblower protections, but also in relation to disclosure for registered organisations commission. Those were passed last year when we passed the bill to establish the Independent Registered Organisations Commission. Hayden also made recommendations in relation to the establishment of a standalone Building and Construction Commission. We've obviously adopted them. And as you know, we've now also introduced into the Parliament the Corrupting Benefits legislation, which adopts a further three Hayden recommendations.
But there are a lot left.
There are a lot. There are about 50 to 55 left. And we are finalising that package as we speak. We are absolutely committed to adopting the Hayden recommendations. As I said, the majority of them, it's all about honesty and transparency in the workplace. But in particular, they're all about ensuring that employees are given the respect that is due to them. And when employers or unions are dealing with employee funds, they do it appropriately.
So what would be, say, three or four next cabs off the rank?
Well, certainly there are some, as I said, in relation to, say, corrupting benefits, which we are seeking to implement. There are further recommendations in relation to what employers and unions should be disclosing in the course of enterprise agreements. There are some recommendations which go to, for example, a choice of superannuation fund in enterprise agreements. There are some recommendations which go towards further transparency. Again, we're happy to adopt them all.
Now, labour market reform has always been a strong rallying cry for the coalition, but when the penalty rates decision came down from the Fair Work Commission, there was a bit of ambivalence in getting behind that. To put it mildly, it took ages for the government to really endorse that decision, which I think it has done now. Why is that? Is it because you realise that labour market reform, and especially something like cutting Sunday penalty rates, is going to be a hard sell in the electorate when people are feeling the pinch, or are there other reasons for this reluctance?
Well, I think we came out quite strongly, in particular in relation to the Prime Minister's statements. The first thing that we needed to be clear about was it is a decision of the Independent Fair Work Commission. So when Labor consistently lies and says the government's cutting penalty rates, it's really important that people know this is a decision of an Independent Fair Work Commission. But on top of that, a commission that was appointed by Labor, Labor set the terms of reference, Labor appointed the panel, and in particular the president of the Fair Work Commission, Ian Ross, and we respect that independent process. It was also important for us to point out that up until recently, Labor and Liberal were on a unity ticket in relation to respecting the independent process. But it's only when Bill Shorten decided to politicise this that suddenly he didn't accept the decision. In terms of the decision itself, we've always said that we acknowledge the positive employment benefits that this decision will bring. We back small business every step of the way. And I think more and more people are now understanding why is it that big unions and big business are allowed to do deals which trade away Sunday penalty rates.
For other things, though.
No, I'll get to that in a minute. But small business have to pay the mandated award rate, which is often anywhere between, say, $5 and $10 per hour higher on a Sunday. Now, to go to your point, they trade them away for other things. Yes, you are right, and that's obviously a rolled-up rate. Okay, it's what's referred to, as we know, a rolled-up rate. The problem with Labor's argument, though, in relation to that is you've traded away a Sunday penalty rate for that rolled up rate. So if you only work Sundays, you're not getting the benefit of that rolled up rate. Labor's entire argument in relation to penalty rates and why they say the decision should be overturned is because Sundays are sacrosanct. Well, if Sundays are sacrosanct, guess what? You don't get to back big unions and big employers doing deals to trade away Sunday penalty rates. That's totally hypocritical.
Do you think that business should be doing more of the heavy lifting in terms of advocating this change?
I believe that if you accept a decision and you embrace the positive benefits and you want to bring people with you, then yes, you should be out there selling that message.
And why are they not doing that more?
Look, you'd need to ask business. Certainly, you know, the conversations I've had, say with the Council of Small Business Australia, this is obviously something that they recognise is positive for their members. It really, as I've said, it evens up the playing field. Small business on a Sunday with the slight reduction in penalty rate will be able to compete with the rates, the lower rate that big business is already paying. But when I've had my discussions with COSBOA, and, you know, Peter Strong from COSBOA issued a press release to this effect, These guys are scared, Michelle. They are scared that the unions will come and get them. I mean, we saw within days of this decision being handed down, the CFMEU came out and basically said they would wage war. You know, small businesses know what the CFMEU are capable of. They've for years watched what the CFMEU has done to small and medium players in the building and construction industry. You know, for COSBOA to issue a statement saying they recommend their members don't put a face to any form of campaign for fear that the unions will come after them, quite frankly, I think that is absolutely disgraceful. But I've spoken to a lot of these small business people and I know why they're scared, and I can understand why they don't want to put their family or their business at risk from a militant union.
Now, while the decision might have positive employment and economic benefits, at least that's the argument, from individuals' point of view, it can be very harsh, and many people stand to lose money, and they're people on low incomes. I think the government's acknowledged that some protection is needed. Do you think that protection is better given by a phase-in of the decision, which is being looked at by the Commission, or by grandfathering existing workers and saying it applies to new workers?
Okay, so you are correct. The Commission itself recognised in Chapter 11 that there would be some hardships suffered by those who will lose money on a Sunday, and they have said that the next part of the process is to work through what those transitional arrangements will be. The Commission has requested that the government put in a factual submission informing the Commission of A, whether take-home pay orders are available, which is something that basically freezes a person's pay so they can't get less than that, and then to look at the various options that the Commission has put on the table. And one of those options is phasing in. The other option is grandfathering. The government is finalising its submission. It will be a factual submission because obviously it's ultimately for the Fair Work Commission, based on all of the evidence that it receives, to weigh up the most appropriate transitional provision to put in. And in particular, I note that the Commission in its decision did say they need to be as simple as possible and as easy to execute for business. Interestingly, in terms of where business is coming from, you've got the smaller sort of end of the scale saying they would prefer grandfathering, but then you've got at the other end of the scale, bigger business, saying that they would prefer a staged transition. You've got the Productivity Commission, who's put a separate view on the table. So look, there's a number of processes that the Commission itself is able to look at. I would note, though, that for example, under the former Labor government, not that they will admit to this, penalty rates were actually reduced. This is not the first time penalty rates have been reduced. Certainly during the award modernisation process, penalty rates were reduced. In some circumstances, and on that, I don't know where the CFMEU or the ACT were, because they were certainly not jumping up and down and screaming at the former Labor government. In relation to the transitional provisions that were then considered by the Commission, in some circumstances they did phase them in over a period, I think it was of 5 years, but in other circumstances they didn't. They just brought them straight in. So we will put all of that information together in the submission for the Commission, but ultimately it is for the Commission to look at all of the evidence and make its determination as to what is the most appropriate transition.
But what is your preference, phasing in or grandfathering?
We actually don't have a preference because, again, I'm not privy to all of the information. I've seen the arguments from COSBOA in relation to grandfathering, but I've also seen the arguments from the bigger businesses in relation to transition. I'm aware that transition has previously worked before. I think what it ultimately goes to is what, as the Commission has identified, will be the most effective way of mitigating hardship, but also it's important to ensure business are not tied up in red tape in terms of actually implementing it. But that is obviously something that all of the evidence, once it's laid out, will be there for the Commission to have a look at.
Now, the ACTU has a new secretary in Sally McManus, and she's arrived with some controversial views, saying that it's justified to break the industrial law in certain circumstances. Malcolm Turnbull has said that the government mightn't be able to work with her on much, given this attitude. Do you think you can work with her in a reasonable to a reasonable degree, and how important is it for the government to be able to cooperate with the ACTU on some matters?
Michelle, I think like so many Australians, to say that I was disappointed, horrified, quite frankly disgusted with the statements that were made is an understatement. In Australia, we pride ourselves on being a country that abides by the rule of law. It's not the rule of unions that regulates this country, it is the rule of law. If you don't like the law, you can seek to change it. But you don't seek to change it by actively going out there and breaking it. Because if it's okay for the unions to break industrial laws, well, why isn't it okay for people to steal if they're hungry? Why isn't it okay for someone to hit someone if they don't like them? Where do you actually draw the line? There is a reason you have a civilised society in Australia, and it's because we have and we respect the rule of law. So in the first instance, very disappointed by Ms. McManus's comments, and quite frankly, if that is the attitude she's bringing to the table, I don't think it is going to be a positive one. But in relation to, you know, can we work with people, I always seek to work with people regardless of who they are. Whether or not you ultimately can, that's another question. But I'll give you an example of where the former ACTU president, Dave Oliver was able to work with business and send a joint letter to the government. And that's in relation to the abolition of the four-yearly review, a recommendation flowing from the Productivity Commission report. It has been recognised by business and by the unions that this is not an effective process, it's time-consuming and it's costing a lot of money.
Is this the review of awards?
Correct, the four-yearly review, okay? So they wrote to the government a few months ago now, and they said they three people signed it, ACTU and two business groups. They asked for the government unanimously to get rid of this. The government has drafted that legislation and has presented it to the parliament. So I think that shows you business, the unions and the government can work effectively together. Whether or not Bill Shorten and Brendan O'Connor want to work with me, that still waits to be seen. But again, it does show you the government will work in good faith where we can get consensus.
Now, it's a parliamentary day and you're tight for time. I just want to finish on two quick Yep. questions. One of the very controversial issues of this week has been the changes to the 18C section of the Racial Discrimination Act. Do you think that electorally that is going to be a big negative for the coalition, or do you think you can manage to neutralise the effect in the ethnic communities?
Look, I think we can absolutely work with the ethnic communities. And in particular, there are many in the ethnic communities that support and understand the change. One of the big problems now with 18C, Michelle, given the Bill Leak case, given the QUT case, is 18C as it stands has been completely undermined. You talk to people about 18C now and they just sort of roll their eyes at you. So what we are seeking to do is to restore credibility to 18C. And in doing so, ensure that we actually strengthen the law. So in removing the words we propose to remove, but inserting the word harass, I believe what you do is you restore integrity back into the section, but you also ensure the section is doing as it was always intended to do when it was first drafted, and ensure that people in Australia are not subject to racial vilification. And certainly the response that I have received, literally via emails and obviously phone calls, has been a very positive response to the proposed changes.
Now, just finally, there have been all sorts of rumours running around this week that there are moves to try to clear away the whole same-sex marriage issue, and the senior ministers, not you, but some of your colleagues have been named as suggesting, for example, a postal vote. Do you think a postal vote on this issue would be a way of breaking the logjam, or do you think that the coalition will stick to its plebiscite policy, or indeed abandon that and just have a parliamentary vote?
Look, I think you know what Australians need to realise is there was only one person standing in the way of same-sex marriage, and that was Bill Shorten.
But where are we now?
Our policy was to take it to a plebiscite,
and that will stay.
That remains our policy. Absolutely, we said we would take it to a plebiscite. That plebiscite would have been held. It would have been held, a vote would have been taken, but for Bill Shorten again playing politics.
But you think the government will stick to that policy?
Well, at this point, we have no plans to change that policy, Michelle.
formula is always one subject to
but
change.
But that's with anything in politics.
We found with AT&T.
But certainly, you know, in terms of where we could have been, there is only one person who stood in the way of the Australian people being able to exercise their vote on this. And that was Bill Shorten. And when I look at a number of the policy positions that Bill Shorten takes, it's very difficult to say that he takes decisions that are in the national interest. He makes decisions that he believes are politically popular at the time. That, unfortunately, is not how you should behave, in particular when you are in government. You make decisions that are in the national interest, not that are necessarily politically popular, as Bill Shorten seems to love to do.
Michaela Cash, thank you for talking with us today. And that's all from our podcast, from The Conversation. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with you soon with another interview. Goodbye for now.